beloved community in action movie nights every third Thursday at 7 p.m. here at the radio station. June 21st, we'll show the documentary film Awake, A Dream from Standing Rock. Awake, A Dream from Standing Rock captures the story of Native-led defiance that changed the fight for clean water, the environment, and the future of our planet. Again, that's a screening of Awake for the KBOO Beloved Community in Action Movie Night on Thursday, June 21st at 7 p.m. at KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The planet's been in decline since 1492, 500 years and counting, surviving the genocide they call colonizing my turtle island. What is the...
Well, good morning. This is Per Fograng, and the show is Fight the Empire. And my guest is Michael Clare, who's a professor of peace and world security studies at Hampshire College. And his most recent book is Rising Powers, Shrinking Planet. And we have him on the line momentarily. He has written an article for Truth Out. He's written quite a few articles, and this one is called Girding for Confrontation and the Pentagon's Provocative Encirclement of China. And I really recommend reading his stuff. Basically, it's the United States is, well, I'll bring this up when we get him on the line, is that the United States Navy is adding the Indian Ocean to its kind of, to its Pacific Command, which seems like a huge thing to do. I mean, it's a big ocean besides the Pacific, but anyway, it's one more way to encircle China. Although the thing that I wonder about is that China is most of its borders are on the land. And the Navy is sort of dealing with sea warfare, but we have Michael Clare on the line right now. Michael Clare, welcome to KBOO.
Oh, always a pleasure.
Well, we're just, I was introducing you, and so we've already done that. And we're talking about your article, Girding for Confrontation, the Encirclement of China. And how is the adding the Indian Ocean to the Pacific Naval Command? What is the meaning of that?
So, well, first, you know, we have to explain that the U.S. military, like the ancient Roman Empire, has divided the world up into half a dozen unified commands, which control all American forces in that territory or area of responsibility. So you have the Southern Command for Latin America, the Africa Command, the European Command, Central Command in the Middle East, and the Pacific Command. And the Pacific Command, you know, goes back to World War II, when it was the Far East Command, was focused on mainly the Western Pacific, Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, the Philippines, Vietnam, fought a war in Vietnam. We're all familiar with that history. Now, as the United States takes on China as its main rival in the world, it sees China from a multidimensional front, and part of that is the Indian Ocean. So people in the military and the strategic community want to change the Pacific Command to be more, to encompass this larger region of encirclement and to include the Indian Ocean. Hence, they decided at the end of May, Secretary of Defense Mattis made this announcement, henceforth the Pacific Command will be the Indo-Pacific Command.
Mm. Well, China has a land border with India and other nations. How does the Navy fit in there?
China has also been expanding its ties into the Indian Ocean area through expanding its naval force. It's acquired what are supposedly civilian port facilities in Sri Lanka, in Pakistan, and elsewhere in the Indian Ocean area, but presumably to support a larger expansion of China's naval fleet. So China is moving into this area, but it also, through its One Belt, One Road economic and infrastructure development project, is extending fingers into the region. It's built railroads all the way through Pakistan to the Indian Ocean. It's built pipelines for oil and roads and railroads through Burma or Myanmar to the Indian Ocean. So from a strategic point of view or a geopolitical point of view, if you're intending to stop China's growth, to encircle China, you want to be present on all sides, and that includes the Indian Ocean side.
Well, isn't China, isn't India also sort of thinking of joining or linking up with the Belt and Road Initiative?
Now, this is where politics or geopolitics enters into the equation. India thinks of itself as a totally independent country. India would like to be viewed as the equal of China and the United States, and it's under pressure from both of those countries, China and the U.S., economically and otherwise. So there are those in India who would like to benefit from closer economic ties with China, view the U.S. as the legacy of the British imperial system, but there are others in India who think that China is the greater threat and that allying with the United States against China would be the wiser move. So what's happening now is a courtship by Beijing and Washington to try to pull India into its orbit, into their orbit. And by renaming the Pacific Command the Indo-Pacific Command, this is an effort by the U.S. to bolster its ties with the pro-U.S. forces within India and try to move India closer to the U.S. and in a more hostile stance towards China. I hope all this is clear.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems to me the U.S. is kind of fighting geography. I mean, for centuries, the Eurasian continent was kind of like where the power was at. The big civilizations were there, and then sort of 500 years ago, the people in Europe, they kind of got into sea power, and that enabled them to acquire territories in the Americas, and so that was the beginning of Western imperialism. But now it's almost like it's reverting back to what the world was like before the discovery of the Americas.
Oh, now that's a very interesting perspective, Per. And I think there are people in China and the United States who probably see it that way. And there are plenty of people in China who think that that they were once the great power, the center of the universe, the center of world politics, and that Western imperialism deprived them of their historical role as the great power, that is China. And they are determined now to restore China to its rightful status. I think that is the message of Xi Jinping, the president of China. That's why he's extended his term limits, so that he can restore China to the great place it once held. At the same time, there are plenty of people in Washington, and I think this is the dominant mood, and I think this is bipartisan, by the way. I don't think there are any Democrats who see differently, that the United States must stop China's rise and prevent it from resuming that status as the world's central power, and to do everything they possibly can. You see that in the fight over ZTE, the telecommunications company that's in the news today, where President Trump tried to lighten the penalties on that company in order to improve negotiations with North Korea. But Democrats are just as fiercely opposing that as Republicans, because they are determined to do everything they can to prevent China's rise. And the military is doing that in its own way by securing dominance of the Pacific and the Indian Ocean, so that China will not be able to break out of its own territorial envelope.
Well, that's a huge envelope when you think of Russia and all the Turkic nations and possibly European nations. I mean, the whole Eurasian continent, that's a pretty huge piece of earth to encircle, isn't it?
It is, but it's also largely a naval, from a U.S. perspective, it's a naval terrain. And this is a world where the U.S. historically has been dominant and China weaker. And so what's happening now in Washington, if you follow the votes in the Congress over the past few weeks for the defense bill, the defense spending bill, is a huge increase in spending on U.S. naval power to ensure that the U.S. remains the dominant naval power from here to eternity, and to so that the U.S. is able to dominate the oceans that surround China in the Pacific and in the Indian Ocean. Because to the north is Siberia of China, and to the west is Central Asia. Those are not the areas that are of concern from a strategic point of view. It's in the Pacific and the Indian Ocean that China seeks to expand.
Well, it seems like a strange kind of a confrontation. On the one hand, you have China building railroads and roads and air travel and making commercial agreements with all these nations around there, and the U.S. responding with battleship aircraft carriers in the Pacific and Indian Oceans. The confrontation, where is that heading? It seems to be kind of futility from the U.S. point of view.
What I think it is very dangerous and provocative.
Definitely.
Now, there's a lot to be... I mean, this is... Other than climate change, this is probably the greatest challenge we face in the 21st century. That is to say, the fact that the United States is facing the rise of a country that could be its equal in the next few decades in many respects. It could outpower us economically. This is an earth-shattering event. And we know from past history, from the 19th and 20th century, that when great powers rise, as did Germany and then Russia, Soviet Union, this often, almost always, leads to conflict. So we have to view the rise of China as one of the most destabilizing factors on the planet. So this requires us to act in a prudent, sane fashion to prevent the high risk of conflict from arising, because we're talking about nuclear-armed powers here. Mm-hmm. We're talking about World War III and nuclear annihilation. So this political, geopolitical conundrum that we face has to be managed in a very sound, sensible fashion. And that doesn't And that, in my view, that is, does not involve sending American warships into close proximity to Chinese naval facilities in the South China Sea and possibly provoking a military clash.
Well, probably an air war or something. You know, some people say that aircraft carriers are really kind of like sitting ducks these days.
We have
about a dozen of them, more than any other country in the world. And you sort of wonder, what good are they?
Well, you know, today's modern aircraft carriers, of course, are escorted by submarines and aircraft and cruisers and destroyers that have a lot of ability to protect them, and they can deliver devastating firepower. So they do present a threat. On the other hand, China has been developing what are called asymmetrical means of warfare to make those aircraft carriers vulnerable. But this kind of conversation is the sort of thing that sounds nicely technical on one hand, but if you look at it from another perspective, this is how wars begin, when somebody miscalculates and a little incident gets out of hand. I don't think either China or the United States want to go to war with one another. Let's make that clear. I do not think that's the intent of President Trump or President Xi of China. This is not what people in the military want. What I fear is that both sides are engaging in provocative behaviors, you know, to thump their chest, to flex their muscles, to show how tough they are. China, by building military bases in the middle of the South China Sea, the United States by sending warships right up against those military facilities. This is not to start a war, but to show who's tougher, but that's the kind of behavior that starts wars, inadvertently. And when you're talking about nuclear powers, this is not the kind of behavior you want to engage in.
Well, it's interesting. At the end of your article, you talk about this could be the plot for a dystopian novel. And it brought to mind is there's a writer named John Michael Greer who writes about energy issues and a whole lot of stuff. And he wrote some article about China and the U.S. getting into a war, but it's based in Africa.
Well, there's certainly competition between the U.S. and China in Africa. And there could be, there could be incidents there. But there aren't a lot of boots on the ground on either side in Africa. So the risk of something leading to a major clash is low. There aren't Chinese aircraft and heavy equipment, nor American for that matter. There's mostly counterinsurgency forces on both sides. So I'm not too worried about that, except as it contributes to tension. We have this very moment now. We have an exceedingly dangerous situation in the South China Sea, where every few weeks, American warships with, you know, advanced weapons are coming within 12 nautical miles of Chinese bases, islands, fortified islands with anti-ship missiles possibly located on them with the capacity to sink an American warship. That's the kind of thing that starts a war.
Well, it's interesting. How does it wasn't part of your article, but do you think the recent business with North and South Korea, does that fit into this picture?
I think it does in ways we can't fully imagine. A little hard for anybody to be certain where all of this is going to lead. On one hand, the reduction in tensions between the U.S. and North Korea is allowing the military, and we're talking here about the Indo-Pacific Command, as we were, talking about earlier, it allows the U.S. command to focus more of its attention on China, which is what it wants to do in the first place. The new commander of the Indo-Pacific Command, Phil Davidson, says that his top priority is to confront China, not North Korea. So maybe things will get worse.
Well, it's like apparently North and South Korea, while the U.S. is, well, North and South Korea seem to be coming closer together. The new president of South Korea has been meeting with the North Koreans, and his party won a huge election victory recently. And there seems to be a lot of momentum in Korea, you know, to reunify and to actually denuclearize the whole peninsula, and which would seem to probably have all foreign forces out of there. So it seems to me that while the U.S. is talking about, you know, the Indian Ocean, the Korean Peninsula is slipping out of our orbit.
Well, it's unclear how all of this is really going to happen. As a person devoted to peace, I would love to see the Korean Peninsula denuclearized, number one, and demilitarized, number two, to the point where American forces do not need to be stationed there in harm's way. That would be a wonderful thing to behold if all of those things would come to pass. So if all of this diplomacy leads to that, you know, we should give out a million Nobel Peace Prizes to everybody involved. Because that's been, you know, a war was fought there, and we're at risk of war today over the Korean Peninsula. So if that comes to pass, that would be a joy. Now, will that mean that the risk of war with China is diminished as a consequence? Is not clear. I'm not sure it would be diminished.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's an interesting article in Politico recently about, and this had to do with the sort of trade war that seems to be building up. And the article is titled "How China Could Hit the U.S. Where It Hurts," and basically they're saying that China could boycott buying U.S. goods, and that would really cripple our economy.
I think that's not an accurate assessment. I think China could hurt the economy of certain sectors of the U.S. economy in certain states. They could stop buying American soybeans, for example, and that would hurt farmers in some Republican-dominated states that voted for Donald Trump, and the economy of those farming areas would be badly hurt, as an example. But the U.S. imports much more from China than China imports from the United States, so I don't think that China is in a position to hurt the U.S. economy. What could happen, and this is what the business pages are talking about each day, is that a trade war between the U.S. and China could get out of hand, and the trade war also includes Canada and Mexico and the European countries. If it goes from one to the other, there could be a global economic meltdown in which everybody falls. That's the big worry. Mm-hmm. But I don't think China can inflict more pain, that much pain on the U.S. without hurting itself more.
What about China and Russia moving away from the dollar? Is that going to lead anywhere? Apparently this is happening on, I don't know, I mean, they are settling their own trade with, you know, without the dollar, you know, in their own currencies, and they've been selling, apparently lately they've been selling off a lot of U.S. bonds. So where is that leading to?
at this stage in the world's economy, the dollar and European currencies, the British pound, the euro, still are a much larger share of the world financial system. So it's certainly true that trading in between Russia and China in their local currencies will expand. There's no question about it. And within within Central Asia and you know, maybe in other areas in Asia, you'll have more of that. But on a global scale, the world economy is still going to be dollar dominated for some time to come.
Mm-hmm. You know, this sort of made a larger question about military spending in general. I mean, can the U.S. Afford all this military confrontation? It's we've got this huge military budget now, and I see these articles about there's one here. There's no money for the F-35. Government auditors tell Congress. Now that was in Russia Today, RT, and there's also another article also from RT about Pentagon report raises alarm that U.S. industry can't support war for much longer. And, naval warfare is very expensive, plus uses a tremendous amount of energy.
Let's be clear. The United mm-hmm. States is an immensely wealthy country.
Mm-hmm.
If it wanted to spend more on defense and spend more on warfare, it could. It has the money. This is a matter of choice,
mm-hmm.
not of capacity. We could spend more money on war, but then our infrastructure will continue to go down the tubes.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and travel across America, and I've been doing some of that, and you wherever you go, you see bridges and falling apart and railroads in disrepair and schools being shut down. You know, we if you want to see more of that, we could certainly spend more on defense. We have the money. We just means, you know, not addressing the opioid crisis.
Mm-hmm. Well,
or addressing the environment.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matter of priority, of choice, not of lack of capacity.
Well, isn't a lot of that money borrowed anyway?
From future generations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is all about values, which is what this fight about separating children from their parents on the border is all about. The numbers of children are, you know, in the thousands. But what's so powerful about what we're hearing is how deeply this strikes at American values.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the same thing what you're asking about here. So long as we want to make having more fighters and aircraft carriers the primary expression of our foreign policy and allow the country to go to the shambles, That's the values that we're projecting. If we want to project other values, that has to be a political decision and a political action.
Mm-hmm. Boy, well, I guess that's where we'll leave it right now. It seems to me, yes, the U.S. could do this and is doing it, but it seems to me that it's like a dead end. A dead end road for the U.S. in particular.
Well, we'll have a great Navy, and
mm-hmm.
I don't mean to disparage the Navy or people who serve in the Navy or anything like that. It's we also have to consider other priorities as Americans
mm-hmm.
that, in my mind, may be more important, like addressing the opioid crisis
mm-hmm.
and fixing our schools and highways.
Right. Okay, I think we'll end it there. Thank you very much for being with us. We've been talking with Michael Clare, who's a professor of peace studies at Hampshire College, and he's written an article in the recent Truth Out, Girding for Confrontation, the Pentagon's Provocative Encirclement of China. Thank you very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Per, as always.
Well, this has been Fight the Empire. Stay tuned for Air Cascadia on KBOO, your radio station.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to present the live broadcast for the 26th annual Good in the Hood Multicultural Music, Arts, and Food Festival. This three-day celebration kicks off Friday, June 22nd, with the Good in the Hood Parade and Festival continuing Saturday, June 23rd, and ending Sunday evening, June 24th. Good in the Hood is back at King School Park at Northeast Grand Avenue. Tune into KBOO starting Saturday afternoon on June 23rd for the live broadcast. More information about Good in the Hood can be found on the KBOO.fm website on the home page.
Good morning, it's KBOO Portland. The time is 10:01. Up next, we have Air Cascadia. Stay tuned.